Hello, everybody.
This is Spice.
And this is Salty, and this is the 3BY podcast for today. It's Saturday, and as usual, we are...
On the road.
You're not hearing this on Saturday. We're recording this on Saturday. So, welcome to the show, the big show, the show of record, the most important show you'll ever listen to. Okay, every bit of that's a lie.
Except, it's a show.
It is a show.
And we're glad you're here.
It is a show. Welcome to the show. Today's subject we're going to be talking about will be, well, it depends on what you want to call it. You could call it the BOL, the bug out location. You could call it the country estate. You could call it the woods. You could call it the hunting preserve. You can call it anything you want. The farm.
We call ours the place.
The place. That's right. So if you're not familiar with the place, we've got all kinds of information on our website, 3BY, Beans, Bullets, Broadcast. Beans, Bullets, Broadcast, yeah. Try that again. Beans, Bullets, Bandages, and you. So, welcome to the show. Bug out locations. We're going to talk about them. What makes good bug out locations, what makes bad bug out locations, and most importantly, things to consider as you are considering about where you would like to have a place to get away from it all, no matter whether it's a weekend retreat or the end of the world as we know it has arrived. So, without further ado, bug out locations. You're going to hear more of my voice in this one than hers because she's already stuck up her nose at me today. The old nose up the air. He's like, you're going to talk about this one, not me.
That is because he did a fine job of finding our location or narrowing down a set of locations for us to look at together.
Okay, a personal thing, Spice and I. We're not really into the stereotypes. The stereotype is that the quote-unquote woman likes to spend the money shopping and the man doesn't like to shop in any way, shape, or form unless it's for guns. Well, this man certainly does like to shop for guns, don't get me wrong. But with our family, it's totally and exactly the opposite of the stereotype, which really isn't very fair at all anyway. If not, then why are there so many people in desperate debt to Home Depot? But anyway.
Everybody's got their Achilles heel, and I've got mine, but mine is fairly small.
Yeah, and yours is very... very, 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 very small. And it's even inexpensive, so that's really good. Hers is seeds and garden plants and stuff. Stuff like that. And she has a couple others that we're not going to get into. Nothing too exciting. But at least not for me.
Mostly, I hate to shop. And I'm not very good at it. And he's much better at it.
One of us has to be a decent shopper or we get nothing bought.
So
I tend to be a good shopper, but I overbuy. I do. I admit it. I tend to be that person who, like, oh, we've got this problem. Let's fix it today with everything.
By buying the things, yes.
By buying the things, which really isn't actually, I've learned, the best plan. A lot of the stuff you have to either make or set up, because otherwise you just don't understand how they're done.
And you don't get quite what you want.
So, anyway, we shopped around. We wanted a place in the country for many, many, many years. We live in a small town. I'll tell you this much. We live in a small town in North Missouri with a population under 5,000, well under 5,000. And our little town is... actually, our house in town is sort of a survival retreat in situ.
Depending on the situation. Under most situations right now, that's right where we'd need to be in an emergency. But we have a plan B.
But we have a plan B, and that's what the place is about. There's a very famous survivalist, and I don't remember his name right now. How's that for? That was a proponent early on in the movement of sheltering in a small town. Not too big, not too small. He would say somewhere between 2,500 and 5,000. I would personally go down to as small as 1,000. 5,000 is starting to get pretty big. I would put the range of a place you would comfortably shelter in between 900 and about 4,000, with the sweet spots being somewhere around 2,500. It's enough. That's a big enough town to have about one of everything. One doctor-type person, several nurses, a dentist, you know, one of about everything that you really want to have in your community if Teotihuacan happens, the end of the world that we know it happens. I have to watch my potty mouth. I actually don't have very much of a potty mouth, but there are a couple words we use. SHTF, you know what it stands for, but this is a G-rated family-safe show, so we're going to keep it that way.
What's wrong with the stuff hits the fan?
Yeah, stuff hits the fan. Excrement hits the rotary oscillator.
Yes. You're getting paid by the syllable today, as you can see.
We're getting paid?
As a multiple of what we got paid yesterday.
Woohoo! So anyway, a big, big proponent of sheltering in a small town. I'm going to start with my thoughts on bug out locations and why people should consider at least having one location already pre-planned. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go out and buy something. But you need to have, if you need to get out of Dodge, you need to literally have an idea of where out of Dodge means. And you need to have a way to keep yourself in shelter and from starving while you're out of your home.
And if there's more than one person in your family, everybody in the family needs to have the same idea of where that spot is so you can meet if communications get difficult.
Right. Every region has its difficulties. Florida, the East Coast, the Gulf states are all in hurricane zones. And hurricanes can be a massive scale. Here in my part of the Midwest, our biggest threats are from bad weather. Because it happens every year. You just have an ice storm every year. You have lightning and wind damage every year. It just happens. You have tornadoes every year. Now, they may not hit your town every year, but I've lived in the town we live in, 35 years now? About that, over 30 years. And we've had 3 tornadoes hit the town. So that's once every 10 years. That means you pretty much really have to have a tornado plan. Because this is not some pie in the sky, never going to happen. You know, we're not talking about alien invasion, zombies rising from the graves kind of thing. We're talking about real stuff that happens. But the difference between like a tornado and a hurricane is the path of the damage is so much smaller with a tornado. A tornado may take out my town of, let's just say we're 3,000. May take out my town of 3,000. We take the whole center of the town out. But it's probably only going to take out that town. It's not going to take out all the surrounding communities. So when we call for aid, which we obviously would, the surrounding communities would come running. Additionally, we live not too far from the Mississippi River, and there are communities along the river that are prone to flooding. Or at least prone to flooding in the massive flood events like 73 and 93. And Spice and I went to help them out during the flood of 93. We went to a nearby community on the river. And we were actually working our tails off on the levee, helping them strengthen the levee when they started passing out the life vests. That will make you stop and think.
Opened your eyes when they start handing out life vests when you already knew the water was coming up on the boards as fast as we could lay the boards down. But then they start giving out the life vests. You're going, okay, it's midnight. If I actually went into the water, what are the chances they'd be fishing me out?
Yeah, because you don't mess with the Mississippi River, even in not flood. The water's too fast and the water's too wide.
And the undertow will eat you.
And the undertow will definitely eat you. So anyway, so each community has...
don't shelter in place on a small community on a big river.
Right.
Because they'll flood.
Everybody's got these things we need to worry about. Here in the Midwest, we need, or at least in the rural Midwest, we need to worry about things like earthquakes. Because the New Madrid seismic fault zone is not that far from here. And unless you know the risk that you have from an earthquake, and unless you have ways of dealing with that in your preps, then, you know, it's a real problem. By the way, yeah, I know exactly what the subsoil is like underneath my house and underneath the place. I checked the geological substrates before buying both of them. So I know if an 8 or 9.0 earthquake lets rip in New Madrid, and it is a matter of time. It's not an if. It is a when. Just like the San Andreas in California, it's not an if that fault's going to give again. It's just a matter of when.
Faults do that.
That's what they do. They are what relieves the stress. And but I know what we're sitting on, and I also know that we live in a wooden house. We don't live in a masonry house. A masonry house has much better ballistic resistance, but we're much more likely to suffer shifting from an earthquake than we are to have somebody shooting at our house. This is the kind of thing you have to keep in mind when you're thinking about bug out locations and survivalism. You know, what is the likelihood that somebody's going to just haul off and start shooting at your house? In our case, it's very, very low. What is the likelihood that there's going to be a massive earthquake in my state? The chances are 100%. It just may not happen this year, but the chances are 100% that a massive earthquake is coming. It is. It always has been that way, and until this fault is no longer has any stress on it, which won't happen in our lifetimes, or our children's, or grandchildren's, or great-grandchildren's, or probably in the lifespan of humanity, they probably will always have earthquakes in this area. So we just have to keep that in mind. So, to me, there are several non-starters when you're considering both a place to live, where your home is your castle, because for most things, most people are planning to shelter in place. Not everybody, but most people are planning to shelter in place.
It's more realistic.
So, to me, if you're planning to shelter in place, then you probably need a pretty safe place to live. When it comes to small things, power's out for a week. That's a small thing. A lot of places will be perfectly safe, perfectly fine. I live in one of those places. Perfectly safe, perfectly fine, no problem.
We've had the power out for most of the week before.
My question is, and I want you to really stop and think about that. You live in a city, or in a suburb of a city, and the power goes down for a week, for whatever reason, hurricane, terrorism, I don't know, it doesn't matter. The power's out for a week. Will there be riots in the streets where you live? If you live in most cities in America, the answer to that question will be yes.
Somewhere in the city, but not everywhere in the city.
But still.
Yeah. Are you in the kind of place where that would happen? When the food quit getting delivered to the grocery stores?
The grocery stores can't open because the power's out. They can't open. You can't operate a grocery store without power. There are rules. I mean, I happen to be on a local emergency committee, and I've actually seen the rules for grocery stores. There are state rules of exactly how much of what you can do based on the amount of time that the power has been out, what you can sell. And they will shut you down if you ignore their rules. And I mean shut you down permanently. So if the power goes out for X amount of time, all this type of food can't be sold. If the power goes out for X amount of time, you're done. So, yeah. So how many people have enough food in their houses? Virtually nobody. Hopefully everybody listening to the show does. But it's just something to consider. Jump right in here. Anything to jump in on?
Floodplains. Absolutely not. Because they become unlivable with not a high level of... You know a floodplain is going to become unlivable at some point. It's just, you don't know when. So I wouldn't consider a floodplain. I wouldn't consider deep in a city, but some of that I know is my personal bias against living in that kind of environment. It's just not my groove. But I don't consider them particularly safe because the more people you have around who are going to be hurting and in need and desperate, and the more used they are to having their needs supplied by somebody else, the riskier it's going to be. And cities score high on both of those dimensions.
My thought is this. People tend to, and I know I do, people tend to just kind of half look at something and, it'll work out. It'll work out. It'll work out. You know, kind of kick the can down the road. Don't really consider everything that's going into it. You know, yeah, it'll work out. We're not in a dangerous neighborhood. But let me tell you, that's a very, very dangerous thing to do in a situation when you're talking about where you live. Because if you live in a place with a lot of people around you, you have to realize that a lot of people around you are alcoholics. A lot of people around you depend on psychoactive drugs. I mean, a lot of people around you. I'm talking about, not talking about one in every hundred.
We're not just talking about the illegal ones either here. We're talking about there's a lot of people on prescription medication to control things like depression and psychosis.
I'm not saying you can't survive in an area where there are all these people, but I'm saying you better have a plan, and you better have it now.
And that plan better include the fact that there isn't going to be good fire control. Somebody's going to start fires somewhere. Even if it's entirely accidental because they're trying to cook dinner without power, they're going to start fires. And a lot of the fire control is going to be out of commission.
That's right. So something to consider. Now, also consider, you have to consider things like, how can you get water? Now, we just did a podcast last week on water, you know, and various different ways of storing water and how we do it. But this is, you can't get past water. Water always has to be number one. What are you going to do for water? How are you going to do water? Okay? That's your number one thing, always. Because you can't live without it.
Consider your lines out if you have to get out. Like, we were talking about earthquakes here a bit ago. I don't think our house would fall down in any kind of earthquake we're likely to get. It's not that tall a house, and it's well-built. And the place isn't going anywhere. But Missouri is chock-full of bridges. Old, rickety, small bridges. And the ones that are small but are not culvert bridges, a lot of those might well come down in an earthquake. So I've considered, how am I going to get out to our backup location, the place, or how am I going to get home from work if the earthquake takes the bridges out?
And also, another thing to pay attention to, nobody will be paying attention to, like in an earthquake, the dams. Dams will break in an earthquake. New, well-designed dams, not so much, but there's a lot of really old dams. There's a lot of TVA dams out there, Tennessee Valley Authority dams, you know, dams designed almost 100 years ago. that, man, it's, you just got to pay attention to this stuff. So consider that when you're looking at a bug out location. Something else to consider when you're thinking about all this stuff is lines of drift. If it gets into a really bad, without rule of law situation, people are going to start moving. A lot of them are going to be going out to the quote-unquote country where they will not be welcome. Let's be very clear. Small communities throughout the north part of the state, the west part of the state, away from your city, depending on where it is, if your city is in the, let's say your city is Chicago, southern Wisconsin is not going to be a place that's going to be welcoming you.
They know they can't handle as many people as are coming, and they are committed to taking care of their own first.
And that's just going to happen.
That's what was in my mind when you were talking about the perfect bug-out location is a small town.
Right.
I think it's a great place to shelter in case of most emergencies, but it's a heck of a lot better if you're known there and live there than if you don't.
Right. Now, I was talking about the perfect bug-out place because, honestly, the best place, way to be a real survivalist is to live at your retreat. I know, what's his name? Rawls. He's the guy that wrote those silly Patriot books. John Wesley Rawls. I forget his name. Something like that. Anyway, Rawls, he's real big on the live at your retreat. And on this one thing, I totally agree with him. If you can, the best thing to do is live where you're going to be. Don't bug out. But if you live in a situation that is not a retreat or is not really defensible, then that's not an option. I mean, I know. I've read it in all the forums. I've talked to people. So many people are going to be sheltering in place in a place that is not tenable. I just want to slap these folks upside the head and say, no, that's not going to work. It'll work for a week, okay? Maybe two.
A week will handle a lot of emergencies,
right,
to be fair.
Absolutely. And if it's a regional thing or if it's a local thing, yeah. But if the poop really does hit the fan, you're not going to make it in the city. You're not going to make it in the suburbs. You're just not going to make it sheltering in place.
Yeah, I'm looking around here as we drive, and I'm seeing, oh, that field right there would produce enough corn to feed my town for a week. Or not a week, a year.
Yeah, a year, absolutely. And that's just one field. Now, we're not near home yet, but we have fields all around us. And then we have grain elevators full of grain.
Protein sources out grazing in their fields. And
which could
eat insects in their ponds right there.
Couldn't go to market, you know? So, anyway, I understand the way things are. Some of you, you know, and it's a situation where, yeah, you may be listening to this thinking, I'd love to do this. I'd love to move. I'd love to get a bug out spot, but I just can't afford it because I'm the only person in the family who this matters to. You know, the spouse doesn't care. Okay, that becomes real hard.
Or the income just isn't enough to support two households, and you got to live where you got to live for a job. I mean, we get that stuff happens.
Okay, that's the second part of our podcast, though. We're gonna go ahead and we've touched on a few of the concerns, and everybody knows the concerns. I guess we don't have to you know sit here and drill on it, but there is another way, and let me tell you how we did it. We had X amount of money available. It wasn't a large amount, okay?
Less than a year's income.
Less than a year's income for one person. And without going into all of the details of where every penny came from, because some of them came from here, and some of them came from there, and some of them came from selling something, and some of them came from nothing.
Doesn't matter.
It was not a huge amount of money. Far less than if you were to go out and buy a new 4x4 pickup truck.
Yeah.
we could have gone out and bought a new pickup truck. We could have made that choice. We could have bought a good luxury type automobile for far more than we spent on the place. Instead,
or more money than we spent on the place.
Yeah, for more money.
Sweat, not so much.
Well, no, but we're talking about buying it. We're not talking about owning it. Sorry, it's just I'm.
Okay.
Instead, we're driving in a car that currently has 201,187 miles on it. Yeah, it's a good car. It's a good car. But it's not a car that it would win any beauty contests.
It doesn't make our random people we drive by envious of us.
In fact, it kind of makes random people we drive by think we're a lot poorer than we actually are.
Which is fine.
Which is fine. Because we learned a secret a long time ago. And this is how we were able to afford it. And this is how you could, should you choose to, afford your own bug out place after years of saving, to be fair. We made a commitment not to spend massive amounts of our money on things like cars, on assets that depreciate. You buy a new car, you drive it off the lot, you've lost a quarter of the value of that car. That is insane financially. Yeah, you got a cool new car. And then what you're doing is you're making payments on that car. I'm assuming you're making payments on the car, but you're 99% of the people make payments on their cars. We don't.
At least on their new ones.
Right. We don't do payments on cars. We only buy things we can afford. And by afford, I mean that means write the check. Even if that means driving a car with 201,000 miles on it, then that's what it means. Because this car runs doggone good. Nothing wrong with my car. I'm patting it on the steering wheel. I love this car. But you got to understand, payments on depreciating assets will kill you financially.
They limit all the other things you can do.
Payments on furniture. Payments on anything that isn't directly related to your house. Okay, most people can't buy a house with cash. Fair enough. I get that. That's legit.
You couldn't either.
Or payments on stuff that make you money. I get that. Let's say, for example, you're a plumber. Well, you need a van. Okay? To store all your tools. Tools. You need the tools. You know, that kind of stuff. But those really aren't depreciating assets because you're using them to make money. Those sorts of payments, they're not my cup of tea. I don't recommend them, but I at least understand them. But payments on large screen TVs, not so much. I get a lot of the payments that people have to make are medical payments. I understand our medical situation is just screwed up beyond all belief. I get that. We're not doing a financial show, but basically what I'm talking about is we bought this place instead of buying a new car. Because that's the amount of money that we put into our place.
So what were the search criteria?
The search criteria was, one, we had X amount of money. Period. That's what we had.
It's not going to be more than that.
It's not going to be more than that because we can't afford more than that. We can't write a check.
the further below that we could get, the more improvements we would be able to put in the short term.
Exactly, because we did want to do a couple of short-term things quick. We did want, if we didn't have a pond on the place, we wanted to put in a pond immediately. We also wanted to get the trees and stuff going because we believe in permaculture, but the sooner you can get those perennials growing, the better. And that's what she's been busting her tail on the last 2 years, getting that done. Okay, we also, you know, that's just the thing. It needed to be in reasonable driving distance for us. So that we could, because, you know, we wanted to enjoy it.
Yeah. It's really improves your quality of life if you can enjoy it as well as have it as a bug-out location. I would have been squeamish about the money and certainly the time and effort if it was just in case of a situation so awful that we couldn't stay in our small town. Because that's a low probability event. It probably would not have been worth it to me.
But it's within a half, our bug out location is within a half an hour drive of her work.
That's why I do most of the work out there. It's closer to my work than it is to our home.
Yeah, our home is about 45, 50 minutes away.
But you want it close enough that you can go out there often and take care of it and be known at the place, wherever your place is, as well as be able to get there on a single tank of gas in an emergency.
All right, that was one thing. It had to be on a hill. Period. End of discussion. Or at least have high ground. I'm not buying a place that's in a floodplain. Heck, I wouldn't mind if half the place was in a floodplain. Just not the half that I'm going to live on.
Yeah.
Because floodplains are very rich. I wanted a place that had a mixture of both open ground and woods. I wanted edges. Edges.
Biologists love borders.
I wanted borders.
That's where most things live and are attracted to.
And I preferred that it be on a decent road. I mean, there are three kinds of roads in North Missouri. There's paved roads, there's gravel roads, and there's those things that are laughingly called roads. They're made out of mud. To me, if you're driving along in Missouri and you start to see grass in between where the wheels go on the track, it is time to stop.
Danger, Will Robinson.
Because it's the road, that means the end of the real maintenance is done. And there's some roads around here that are just absolute mud roads. You can't, and these gravel roads can turn into mud roads just like, boom, before you even know it.
Some of them, it depends on their bedding. But you can tell if you know gravel roads when you're riding on them. The thing is, you don't know when you're going to have to get out there, and it might be when the weather's bad. So being able to get out there even when the weather's bad is a real thing.
And
ours is on a paved road, but just barely.
Yeah. And also, you need to be able to get there pretty much even in the worst of weather. We have a couple of issues with the place. If it's really flooding, it takes us down to one route, which is way out of the way. You have to go an extra 40 miles to get there because, well, the bridges flood if it's flooding. But that's most of that's very rare. And the flood water doesn't stay up. It's a flash flood area, so it'll be up for 6 hours and it'll go down. So that's not that big a deal. So, yeah, we wanted enough acreage that we could have enough room for us to spread out. I wanted somewhere between 25 and 50 acres, which is kind of a hard look.
Parcel size, yes.
Yeah, because most places are sold by 40, well, around here they're sold by 80 acres, 80, 160. But there's a lot of things that are divided up into 40s.
It's not that we would have had our feelings hurt if it was more, but we couldn't afford more.
Right, our price per acre is just, that's just how much we had. And we looked for a very, very long time. And there were some other criteria. I'm trying to remember what they were.
We could be able to build a pond on it. If it didn't have a good water supply, we would be able to put in a good water supply. That was one consideration.
We didn't want multiple neighbors living right on top of us.
We looked at the zoning to make sure they would not be stupid about us doing what we need to do.
Yeah.
That's not really a problem up here, but it's worth thinking about at any rate.
We checked on codes, building codes, to make sure that we're buying in a county that doesn't have any. Now, I know several of your heads just exploded. You're going, what? You want to buy in a place that doesn't have building codes? Why would you want to do that? Because we're putting in everything new. We're building it. But I don't want to have an inspector in on my place every 5 minutes looking over my shoulder. I don't need that. Okay?
If you're going to be able to put in services, see how much it would cost to get the services from where they currently are to where you want them to be.
Exactly. Exactly. We were having, this is one of the things that, I talked about this in the last podcast, but this is one of the things I made sure we did, is we made sure that the water, it does have rural water going by, city water, I made sure that the water was on our side of the road, because it's really expensive to
crossroads with water lines.
Right. Yeah. Another thing that I absolutely, was a deal breaker for me, were right-of-ways. I want to own the road in and out of my place. I would never buy a piece of property that depends upon a right-of-way across somebody else's land. Absolutely not. That's a deal-breaker for me. Because if trouble arises, what's the first thing that's going to happen? They're going to deny you access to your land.
Big fat gates in your way.
Nope. Big fat gates with a dude with a shotgun on the other side of it, saying, stay off my land. No, that's not, it has to have its own access. So these were some of the things that I considered. Now, on a bigger, more macro picture, this wasn't really, these other things I didn't really consider because they go without saying for us. If I were buying just a straight place to have, to bug out in the woods for, and I lived in the East Coast or out in the West Coast, place I wouldn't be visiting often, I would do all of the things that we have just talked about, especially the zoning and the codes. I would buy someplace west of the Mississippi River, because the population really thins out west of the Mississippi. If you look at our population, even here in rural North Missouri, and compare it to where we were just at, Western Illinois has counties of 80, 90, 100,000 people. The small counties have 30,000 people in them. Whereas in North Missouri, the small counties have 3,000 people in the whole county. The less people you have to deal with in a grid down or Tiawaki situation, the better.
Especially if they're farming areas, they're used to producing more food than they use, so you're not going to run into food issues very much.
And especially if you're not a local.
And there's a heck of a lot of people who know how to do things out here.
That's right.
Do things other than shuffle papers. Oh, one other consideration I'd want to put in, it relates to the part woods, part open. If you've never tried to grow things in the ground, trust me, you absolutely do not want to do that starting with a forest.
No, you do not.
Because digging around roots is really hard, and you'd have to cut down a whole lot of trees to get enough light to do something, even if the soil is suitable. Think about your soil quality. Ours is pretty poor, and that's kind of a downside of where we are, but it's also why it was so affordable. It's not suitable for row cropping because it's too hilly and the soil's too poor. But knowing that, we can amend small patches and make it work for permaculture. But if all we had was the woods part of it, it would be very difficult to grow food that wasn't walnuts and blackberries. Blackberries, I guess.
One of the things, I mean, remember that place we were looking at that we both really liked? The place down by Atlanta, Missouri, not.
Is that the one on the Almost Impossible Road?
No, that was the one on that had the, it was all woods and had that little cabin there.
Oh, yes.
It was 30, 35 acres.
Pretty. It would have been a lovely
beautiful spot. Gorgeous spot. Gorgeous spot.
Great hunting. But frankly, even great hunting, you shoot those six deer and then you're hungry.
Yeah, but it was all woods. I would love to have had the property just to have a, I mean, it'd been a perfect vacation getaway spot. But it would not so much on a bug out type location because you couldn't plant trees, you couldn't plant your fruit trees, you couldn't plant your food forest. Yeah, so it didn't work for us.
And lots of big trees release things from their roots that inhibit other plants. So, yeah, they're. Even if when you clear the soil might not actually grow anything for a while.
If I were looking, and if I had money, okay, if I had money, I would look for one of two things. I would look for 10 to 30 acres with a house already on it in a small community. Near a small community. But keeping in mind that in and near a small community are two totally different things. If you're a mile outside of town, you're outside of town. Town's not going to come out to help you.
But you're also not going to burn down if the town catches on fire.
So just keep that in mind. You will not have the protection of the rest of the town, whereas if you live in the town, then you'll have the protection of the rest of the town.
Oh, by the way, if you are planning on your bug-out location is the woods and you're planning on living by hunting, may I humbly suggest you try that for one summer vacation and see how that goes. Because you can overhunt an area in a hurry if you're planning on living off your hunting. It's not realistic unless you're moving. That's why all the people who live strictly off hunting were nomadic.
You know, I always get all these guys who think they're really, really good in the woods. Yeah, most of you are not. Okay, no offense to you, but most of you are really not nearly as good in the woods as, not you my listeners, but most of the guys who brag about how good they are in the woods just really aren't.
Foraging for wild foods. I enjoy doing that from time to time. I've made a little bit of a hobby of it. You do not want your livelihood to depend on that, especially come October.
You don't want to try and feed your kids that way in February.
Yeah.
You just really don't. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Try plan B, okay? You think you can go out there and hunt and fish all year round? There's just not that much game. Even out here, where there's a lot of game, there's not that much game.
And at least where we are, if you want to fish in the winter, you require a chainsaw first.
That's right. If you want to hunt, you know, you want to be hunting and shooting game, you're going to be shooting cattle. Seriously. That's what's going to be out here.
And then the dude who owns the cattle is going to be shooting you.
Right. So just keep that in mind. The one other thing that I wanted to recommend is talk about is when you're looking, and if you find someplace, and if you decide you want to do this for some reason, like living, if we hit a SDO, shoot hits the van situation, don't talk about bug out location to anybody but people like us. Don't use that phrase. Don't use those words. It's always the farm. With us, it's the place.
The place.
Or the vacation spot.
Or
the hunting lodge.
Oh,
it's a great
totally
one.
Get that.
Yeah. Oh, you got some. Because that way you don't even have to hide it. You don't have, just don't tell anybody where it is. But
oh, we may like to retire out there or snowbird there when we retire.
Yeah. Snowbird in the opposite of, this is where we come when it ain't snowing.
Yeah.
To be perfectly clear, we know snowbirding.
Spring and fall is beautiful in Missouri.
That's right. So, yeah, spring and fall is beautiful in Missouri. Canada is great in the summer. In the summer only.
And then there's the other 11 months.
So, yeah, don't talk about your bug-out location. Talk about your hunting land. Or your, that's where I got my fishing pond. Because you got to keep it into what the normals think is normal, okay? If you say that, everybody will go, oh, yeah, that sounds cool. You like to fish? Yeah, you know?
Otherwise, one of two things happen. They think you're weird, which is usually harmless, but could be socially annoying and inconvenient. Or they think, oh, well, if I get into trouble, I know somebody who's got a hunting place.
Right. So, yeah, it's one thing to admit that you have it, and that's no big deal. Just don't tell people where it is. I think there's like a few of our friends have been there, but they're more of our like-minded type friends. One of our friends actually helped Spice plant some of the trees, but she's definitely a
like. Well, yes, she is welcome anytime.
Yes, she is welcome to come, absolutely.
If she showed up on our doorstep after some dramatically bad world event, it would be open the door, come on in.
You're dang right. I'd love to have her around. And that's all the
besides
details.
Besides being our friend, you know, she's...
She's very...
She's got skills.
She's got skills. She's got mad, mad skills. And lots of really big guns that she knows how to use. I gotta go to Tim Taylor, the tool man here. Big guns. Okay. So, there's a few of our thoughts on bug-out locations. If you have any specific questions, drop me a note. If you don't, well, drop me a note anyway. If you like what you hear, please share the podcast with your friends and family.
Be well.
Be well. Live well.
Spice out.
Salty out. It's salty out. That's just really sounds weird. Spice out?
Well, salting out means how you get proteins to fall out of solution. So
what?
Salt out. That's how you get curds to form in cottage cheese.
Is it?
It is. It's one way.
Anyway. Is that why it's called cottage cheese is so salty?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that cottage cheese was really salty up until you mentioned it. And then it really is, because I can even taste the salt that way.
Uh-huh.
And cheese curds, too.
Especially cheese curds.
Oh, cheese curds are good, though.
They are.
You gotta admit, cheese curds are good.
But you gotta be restrained.
Nom, nom, nom. Yeah, or your head will explode. I can eat cheese curds till my head explodes.